airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m. It's a modern view on historical issues concerning the entire African world, addressing how African people are participating in globalization, ways in which the rest of the world continues to exploit African resources, uncovering labor violations by corrupt politicians and Western government powers. Learn what's happening now in interviews with artists, activists, scholars, and a host of other experts each episode. Listen Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Africa Now is also available on iTunes Podcast, Google Play Music, as well as SoundCloud on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
Peace, y'all. This is Rod Stars.
This is G1. Together, we Rebel Diaz.
And when we out here in D.C., the DMV, we bump WPFW.
Washington.
Every Tuesday, 9 to 10 a.m., Voices with Vision. You heard?
Understand. We've been trying to move this struggle from a lower to a higher level.
This is Voices with Vision, bringing you news and analysis.
It's about cutting-edge social justice issues by mixing various voices and ideas
with information, cultural expressions, and commentary.
Voices with Vision airs every Tuesday on your Jazz and Justice station, WPFW.
Good morning, good people, lovely listeners. It's Tuesday, March 26, 2024. Time for this week's edition of Voices with Vision, the show that's not for the politically faint of heart. I'm one of your co-hosts, Nefer Freeman, in the virtual studio with your other co-host, Brother Craig. Brother Craig, how be thee?
I'm good, Nefer. Thank you. Good morning to all our listeners and podcast subscribers. On today's show, we get a great geopolitical overview of what's going on in Latin America and the Caribbean region from Camila Escalante of Casasun News.
And today is one of those rare occasions where we will open the phone lines to hear from you, the listeners. As is customary, we'll start the show off with the commentary by Mumia Abu-Jamal, who remembers Ralph Pointer. Revolutionary life. Rest in peace, Ralph Pointer. Soldier fighting for political prisoners and so much more. And for all our political prisoners like Wamia, all our freedom fighters languishing behind prison walls, what's the call?
Free them all.
A Revolutionary Life. The English poet William Wordsworth once said, "The child is the father of the man." Rarely has such an anecdote been so true as in the wild rebel life of Ralph Pointer. Pointer, a member of the Black Panther Party and the Black Liberation Army, is perhaps best known, at least in recent days, as the man who fought hardest for the freedom of his imprisoned radical wife, lawyer Lynn Stewart. He stood alone in the sweltering Washington, D.C. summer sun for hours with a sign in front of the White House demanding her freedom. But a reflection on his youth shows an unusual child. One of six children of the Pointer family in a small steel town in western Pennsylvania called Vandegrift, a few miles from Pittsburgh. His father, George Pointer, was a union organizer there, and little Ralph would actually accompany him when he was just 6 years old. At 12 years old, he took pleasure at playing in the snow, making snowballs and throwing them as far as he could. One day, another union organizer saw the boy throwing snowballs and said to Ralph, "You're pretty good with that snowball, aren't you?" Ralph replied, "Of course. I can hit anything I aim for, no matter how far." The union organizer asked him to climb a hill overlooking the steel mill and explain to the boy that the union was on strike against the mill and the guys being driven there were scabs or men trying to take union jobs. He then asked Ralph to pack his snowballs with big rocks. Ralph did so. When he asked Ralph if he could throw these rock snowballs at the trucks that stood in front of the mill and hit their front windows, you could almost guess young Ralph's response. "Of course." Ralph threw for most of the day and hit exactly what he aimed for. That night, the union organizer went to Ralph's home and told his father that Ralph was very instrumental to the union's success in striking against the mill. Ralph Pointer helped the union before he even became a teenager. When he went to the local elementary school's third grade, he learned what his older brothers had learned years before. That colored boys, well, that's what they called them back then, couldn't go to school without encountering violence, as there were so few colored people in the town. Ralph was beaten, and his new hat and jacket made by his mother got messed up. When he saw how sad his mother was at seeing his state, he resolved to end it the next time it occurred. The next day, when his attackers came at him, he didn't run. Instead, he stood his ground and fought back vigorously. Before long, his attackers began to flee. He learned a life lesson about self-defense that would, years later, inform his political. Now the words of Ralph Pointer, quote, "Black lives have never mattered, except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outdoors again," unquote. Ralph Pointer. Ralph Pointer, steel worker, elementary school teacher, investigator for his lawyer wife, union brother, revolutionary, returns to his ancestors after 89 winters in America with love, not fear. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
This is Nepha and Brother Craig in the virtual studio. We're getting ready to get deep into geopolitical politics of the Western Hemisphere, particularly Latin America, and in a way that you know is not for the politically faint of heart. I'm actually very pleased to have our guest with us. Camila Escalante is the co-founder and editor of Causa Tun News and is the Latin America correspondent for Press TV. Camila and I have been on a couple delegations together in Latin America, particularly Nicaragua, and I've been, you know, wanting to have her on the show for a while. She is, can get really deep because of her work. Can get really deep and good in terms of the geopolitics of Latin America. Camila, welcome to Voices with Vision.
Thank you so much for having me. Great to hear from you guys.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's open this up. In a conference or gathering in Colombia, Bogota, Colombia, like past weekend, there was a declaration, a call, a zone of peace campaign statement in solidarity with the Haitian people, denouncing the ongoing attempts by Western imperialists to force an armed intervention and another illegitimate government on the Haitian people. I know that you were there covering that gathering and have and can talk about that. So can we talk about that? Because everybody's hearing about Haiti right now. The corporate media and imperialist media is just really covering it all kind of messed up ways. But they're not going to hear about gatherings like what happened in Bogota and the solidarity that people have in terms of the correct position on Haiti. What can you tell us?
Yeah, well, we're coming up on the 1 year anniversary of the launch of the Zone of Peace campaign. The Zone of Peace campaign was launched by, as you guys, of course, know, the Black Alliance for Peace on April 4th of 2023. So we're just a couple of weeks away from that 1 year anniversary. And since then, a number of organizations have joined the campaign, among them organizations that fight for the sovereignty of Puerto Rico, the Puerto Rican people. We have the Nicaragua Solidarity Coalition, which is a number of organizations that fight for the sovereignty of the Nicaraguan people and are also in solidarity with the Sandinista Revolution and also highlight the achievements of the Sandinista Revolution. So all sorts of organizations came together under the banner of the Zone of Peace campaign. And of course, the idea behind it, just to summarize, is that there are six, you know, initial core demands, and all of them support Latin America and the Caribbean, this region, as a zone of peace, as was declared by CELAC, this community of Latin American and Caribbean states, in 2014. It's not something that we feel has been honored, neither by the United States and SOUTHCOM, nor other NATO militaries, nor some of the country's governments in our region, and specifically on the issue of Haiti. And this campaign, the Zone of Peace campaign, has as one of its six initial core demands, the demand of U.S., UN, NATO out of Haiti. And this is something that has obviously come up once again in the last couple of years, particularly in the last year, as primarily the United States, as well as Canada, France, and the UN Secretary General, but other governments as well, have come together to try to piece together a multinational security force, which is really just an armed military foreign intervention into Haiti, built on the premise, of course, that Haitians are not equipped to govern themselves. So we've already seen this before happen in Haiti. And so what took place in this planning meeting that was held was there were people who put out statements on behalf of their organizations demanding that they cease this armed intervention in Haiti, demanding that the U.S. and U.N. Get out of Haiti and Haiti's business, allow Haitians to govern themselves and fix their own problems. And we also had a statement that came out on behalf of several organizations, among them organizations of Afro-descendant Venezuelans and Afro-descendant communities in Colombia as well. And so they signed this letter that was very important because it's saying that if our governments cannot block this foreign intervention in Haiti, then it's our job to pressure them to stop the foreign intervention. Foreign intervention in the form of sitting down. There are governments who sat down in Kingston, Jamaica, to try to make decisions for the Haitian people without any real Haitian representatives there. And they call themselves stakeholders. they repeatedly, this was chaired by the chair of CARICOM now, which is Irfan Ali, the president of Guyana, repeatedly calls everyone sitting at the table stakeholders rather than Haitian people. It's the stakeholders, which was in this case, Anthony Blinken was present. One of the chairs of the meeting was also the foreign minister of Jamaica. And then, as I said, the president of Guyana and all of the other heads of CARICOM. These are the stakeholders when it comes to the issue of Haiti. So that's what's being denounced right now by the Zone of Peace campaign, is that Haitians need to be able to make their own decisions. But the other stakeholders, as they call them, quote unquote, who were present at that meeting, were these different representatives of the United Nations. And you have to remember, back in October, when the United Nations Security Council voted on a resolution to send this multinational security support service to Haiti, the UN Secretary General at the time was saying that it needs to be a non-UN force sent into Haiti. Why is the United Nations sending a non-UN force to Haiti? Why are they promoting this? And so it just seems like a disaster about to take place all again. And so this is what people now in Latin America and the Caribbean are finally making some noise about. And even some governments have spoken out about it. We've heard concern from Cuba, from the government of Venezuela, and also from the president tempore of CELAC, Xiomara Castro, who has said that if we're going to try to help Haiti or be in solidarity with Haiti, it can't be in the form of another foreign military occupation.
Yeah, that's excellent. So if you can maybe get more into CELAC, because that was a good question when you start asking about the position of Xiomara Castro and then all these other countries whose leadership it seems clear on it, they're also all targets of U.S. imperialism, direct targets of U.S. imperialism and U.S. attempts to overthrow their governments and, usurp their leftist leadership, anti-imperialist leadership. Maybe we can go more into the implications, because also there's some stuff that's happened around in Honduras recently that implicates the U.S., a whole lot of it. So if we can segue into that and the significance of President Xiomara Castro's declarations to CELAC about Haiti, where she says, CELAC will give you all necessary and unconditional support to Haiti, the first independent people of Latin America and the Caribbean, said the state, her statement, and it was released Saturday by the executive office of Tegucigalpa. In turn, the head of state rejected military action in the Caribbean country and called on all the presidents and prime ministers of CELAC to act immediately and efficiently as a result of the events suffered by the Haitian people that threaten regional peace.
Precisely. We're hearing different things. On the one hand, as I spoke about in Kingston, the capital of Jamaica, there was this meeting with representatives of the UN, as well as Anthony Blinken, as well as all the heads of CARICOM. And they're trying to find ways to, I think, expedite the start of this so-called multinational security support mission into Haiti, because it's been very difficult locating, first of all, the funds. It's all being funded by the United States. They're not receiving the sort of support that they want financially, except they are receiving some pledges of support of actual troops being sent from some different countries. Unfortunately, that's countries of the global south. It seems like Kenya won't lead this mission. Now it could be another country, perhaps another African country. And the problem is that they seem to believe that because the government that these CARICOM countries recognized in the recent past, that it was the Haitian government itself that was asking for this security support in the form of foreign troops and arms and all of that. On the other hand, like I already mentioned, the Zone of Peace Declaration of 2014, a lot of countries understand that, or governments such as Venezuela and Nicaragua and Cuba, they understand that to mean that we shouldn't be inviting foreign militaries onto our continent, whether to do these sorts of aggressive military annual drills with NATO countries, or in this case, to police other people, to bring in import troops that are from another continent to police these people. And so it seems that there's a little bit of a disagreement, but between what President Xiomara Castro, who now since this month, beginning in March, is the pro tempore president of CELAC, she seems to have a different understanding of things than these Caribbean leaders. So unfortunately, Xiomara Castro took some very bold steps in the first days of her pro tempore presidency, and she said that we will not, or we should not, allow military intervention into Haiti. And she also made other statements. She called on the UN Secretary General in a letter saying that we need to do everything possible to save the lives of Palestinians in Gaza who are facing a genocide right now. And she said that we need to do everything in our power, or you need to do everything in your power as UN Secretary General to ensure that the aid, the humanitarian aid and supplies are able to cross into Gaza. And she also did one last thing, which was that as the head of SALAC on Twitter, she congratulated President Vladimir Putin and for his reelection during the recent Russian presidential elections. And so she has come under attack by about 10 countries of Latin America and the Caribbean, if you include Dominican Republic, I believe was one of them, for making these statements in her position as the with the presidency of SALAC, saying that that simply doesn't represent them. And I think that's very odd to say because, you know, for instance, they're saying that as the head of SALAC, she shouldn't be congratulating the president of Russia for his reelection. But the head of regional blocs or political blocs or military blocs, such as NATO, they make all sorts of statements like this whenever there's an election or a significant world event, whether it's condolences or anything else. And so it seems like they're really just coming after her because she has the correct position on Palestine against the genocide, trying to save every life possible and demand action by the so-called international community, and also saying that we cannot allow that military intervention on our continent, whether it be Haiti or Honduras or Panama or Grenada, be normalized. This shouldn't be a normal event, and that we need to push back against that. And so it seems that they're not very, these sort of U.S. lackey governments are not very happy with some of the things she's doing in her initial days of the presidency of SALAC.
Can I ask you, hold on one, I thank you for that. I want to ask you to do something, and it might be a little bit of a struggle because I want to ask you if you can be concise with this one so we can get into, if you can give our listeners a little bit of a background in to the genesis of the presidency of Xiomara Castro. I mean, people may not even remember the deposing of Manuel Zelaya, and there was, I just want to give our people some background on Honduras right now in this situation against juxtaposed to U.S. imperialism.
I can do that. How short do you want me to make it?
3 minutes. I'm sorry. I know that's
Like very short. No, it's fine. Well, I think it's really important to say for those who didn't follow that, of course, there was this monumental event that took place in 2009 in Honduras, which was the coup against President Manuel Zelaya. And so Manuel Zelaya was someone who was closing ranks with Hugo Chavez and with ALBA TCP, and he was a part of that sort of pink tide and was making really important changes to the country. And so Xiomara Castro, his wife, was part of the struggle against what Hondurans consider to be this years of U.S.-imposed dictatorship after they removed Mel Zelaya. And so she became one of the most important figures in the country. There were a lot of detentions, arbitrary detentions, a lot of repression by the Honduran police, all backed by the United States and Canada, of course. And so finally, she ended up being the candidate for the presidency for the Partido Libre, which is a socialist party. And it's a party that has strong links to the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, obviously to the Chavistas in Venezuela, and has a very important program that they would like to implement in Honduras these coming years. That includes stopping privatizations, nationalizing strategic industries in the country. She, of course, identifies as a feminist. And so a lot of really important things are expected in her mandate in the coming years. And they have already been hit by sanctions, people within the government of Honduras and also the Partido Libre, the party of Xiomara Castro, have already been sanctioned. And not all countries are sanctioned by unilateral coercive measures from the United States. So far, by and large, the countries that have been sanctioned have been those countries, Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Cuba, that we all know, who have chosen to implement their own economic models, their own social models, political models in their countries, and have really rejected U.S. intervention and Monroe Doctrine, et cetera. And it seems like Xiomara Castro is the next country on their list, the next government on the list of countries that Washington is going to go after. And a great part of that is that this is a country which just 1 year ago this week established relations with China and has really important huge infrastructure projects coming in the coming years. So that's the context of the attacks against Xiomara Castro as she begins her SALAC presidency.
Now, I wanted to ask you about Cuba, I think a place that you may have recently visited. The political and economic circumstances that are in play right now in Cuba, if you have any thoughts about that, as we're talking about intervention from the outside into Haiti, what's going on in Cuba?
Well, there are some limited protests in Santiago, which you may know is on the eastern side of Cuba. And whenever anything like this happens, of course, it's blown out of proportion in the international media. This is 16 hours by bus from Havana, just for reference. It's very far away. Obviously, there are a lot of reasons why people in any country might want to take to the streets when there's economic difficulty, particularly in the form of a unilateral coercive measure, set of unilateral coercive measures, or a U.S. blockade, economic financial blockade, that has been leveraged against the island, its government, and its people for the last 65 years. Recently, an article was published by the Cuban media, which talks about the ways in which the CIA is maneuvering to manipulate the price of products in the country and to subvert order in the country. They do things like asphyxiate the country, attacking the currency, generating hyperinflation. Obviously, it's very difficult to purchase products. This country is an island, so you don't have people who are able to smuggle in products through jungles or through other land borders. So it's very difficult. And the government has been very clear about the ways in which this affects access to medical supplies, to medicine itself, and to things like milk for babies or baby formula, those sorts of things that are absolutely critical. And so this is just what took place the other day, which was for a limited time, was just another, event that was used by these people who are against the Cuban Revolution, many of them based, of course, in Miami in the United States, but certainly all on the exterior, to try to create some propaganda to suggest that people are unhappy with their government and that there is havoc throughout the island. It's simply untrue. And so, I think the most important thing for people in the U.S. is just to continue to pressure the government to end the U.S. blockade on Cuba. Most people don't know why it exists. Most people don't support it. And it has simply been a failure of the movements and organizations, as far as I'm concerned, in the U.S., in terms of their inability to pressure the government to lift it. As much as people have mobilized in order to end the genocide in Gaza, there has been a lot of talk about an arms embargo on Israel and those sorts of things. We need to have that sort of permanent pressure campaign on the U.S. government as well, because what they're doing against Cuba is an act of genocide. It is literally trying to starve this country and the people in it into submission and make life there absolutely unlivable and forced people to seek alternatives like leaving the country and things like that. And these are really drastic measures. And any country that's been under sanctions has really felt it, whether it be Belarus or whether it be North Korea or Zimbabwe. But in the case of Cuba, it has been 65 years of this. And so this, you know, and any difficulty economically on the island in terms of the different ways in which people are affected by shortages and things like that is all related to the U.S. blockade.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know whether I know we don't have much time, but I just wanted to ask you this because in addition to Cuba and Haiti, another area of Latin America that has some focus in the United States is Mexico. And I've often wondered, you know, about the possibilities of this pink tide. I think you referred to it as this, you know, movement for socialism and anti-imperialist type of movements having a foothold in Mexico. What is your thought about the prospects of change in Mexico?
Well, I attended the launch of Claudia Sheinbaum's campaign. She is the candidate for presidency for the Morena Party. This is the party of Andrés López Obrador, who is the current president. He's extraordinarily popular in the 70% range of popularity. And looking at all of the polls and the averages, it looks as if Claudia Sheinbaum has about 64% support in the polls. And the next contender, which would be a right-wing candidate representing an alliance of three different right-wing parties, is in about the 22% range on average, looking at all of the different recent polls. And so it's very clear that people believe that Claudia Sheinbaum is the continuation of AMLO. They say that the era of privatizations has ended. No more privatizations of state industries. In fact, they want to nationalize more strategic industries, and they're putting a lot of emphasis on these massive infrastructure projects that are really going to help connect not only the country itself, but also help with trade from other continents, including transnational or transoceanic railway that's going to be built. And these are some of these projects are going to be built with the help of China, of course, as well. And so this is a really amazing opportunity. They had a really strong run with AMLO in terms of some of the progress they made. Claudia Sheinbaum is known as, she was the head of the Mexico City, I guess the equivalent of like the mayor. And she has a very strong record for cleaning up the city. It's a very safe city. We know that there's a lot of organized crime and violent crime around Mexico, but the city itself has done very well. And so she has that record. And so she has a lot of support, not only from the Morena Party, but also the Workers' Party or the Labor Party, the PT of Mexico, and the Verde Party. And so that is going to be, those elections are going to be in June. It's not that this is some, you know, necessarily revolutionary socialist government that we're going to see joining the ALBA TCP bloc, but they've taken a very, they've taken quite good positions in terms of neutrality when it comes to the Russian special military operation overseas, when it comes to Palestine. Sheinbaum has more of a neutral position. Her opponents, on the other hand, are supporters of the far right Venezuelan opposition and supporters of Israel. But what people are really voting for is improvement to the economy. It's going to be very important that they continue to strengthen jobs and opportunities so that young people and Mexicans in general don't have to look to migrate to the United States. And they need to really take control of the situation that is organized crime in the country. Unfortunately, it continues to be a struggle in areas of the country that that have been taken over by these criminal bands. And so it's, you know, another term in office for Morena is going to be really exciting. And obviously, the United States is not going to be supporting that sort of a ticket, but it's inevitable. And that's what I witnessed when I was there, just the massive amount of support for this current government and the next one that will surely be elected in June.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Camila. Really quick, what is the website of Calcitrun News and how people can keep up with your work?
Well, we're just about to launch a new website, and it's going to have a different URL. So I won't say what that is yet, in case it ends up being something else. But please follow Calcitrun News on social media, of course, on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok.
All right. Thank you very much for this insights. We appreciate that analysis. We're glad to have you back. We were speaking with Camila Escalante, co-founder of and editor of Calcitrun News, and is the Latin America correspondent for Press TV. Thank you so much for being on Voice with Vision.
Thank you, guys.
WPFW is looking for a new place to hang our hats and microphones. And we're betting that members of WPFW's In the Know listening community, folks like you, may know of spaces where we might make our new home. Have you walked past or know of a cool space that appears to be for lease? Hip us to it. Know of something that's not yet on the market? We're all ears. Your station for Jazz and Justice requires 2,200 square feet of space in Washington, D.C. or immediate environs. Metro accessible with nearby parking. We value your suggestions and observations as we embark on this vital mission. Email your tips to wpfw.lsb.relocation@gmail.com. And thanks for all you do to nourish and sustain WPFW, building a better world one broadcast at a time.
You're listening to Voices with Vision, the show that's not for the politically faint of heart on your Jazz and Justice station. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
All right, that was a beautiful, enlightening conversation with Camila Escalante, you know, talking about Latin America, what's going on, Cuba, Mexico, you know, and the other countries in the region. So it just looks like, again, this is another part of the world where the power, the influence of U.S. imperialism is being challenged. And we just got to keep pressing on with the struggle and know what's going on.
That's right. Man. And, go ahead. Yeah.
And I think too, we got, speaking about, you know, what's going on, there's actually quite a few events and important dates that we want to let people know about that they can tune into, lend their support, and get the benefit from. I think, Nefer, you're going to mention some of those things?
Yeah, they're actually in-person events. So it's like when you hear tune in, I think of going, you know, sitting back at home. So you got to get out your house for these. And what we did say in the beginning of the show, I'm going to say this before I do the announcements, is that we were going to open the phone line. So just to get people primed up for that, the number to call is 202-588-0893, and before you do it, we have a topic of what we're going to talk about, so you don't just call if you don't know what. And I'm going to do these announcements. The first one is just to let people know, every second and fourth Wednesday of the month, Pan-African Community Action, PACA, does our Asada Shakur study group sessions at the Black Wellness and World at the Black Workers and Wellness Center in Anacostia, right across the street from the Anacostia Metro Station. And that the next one is tomorrow at 7 o'clock, and it will be about the women of the Eritrean women. Women of Eritrean Liberation Front. The women of the Eritrean Liberation Front. That's tomorrow at 7 p.m. and the Black Workers and Wellness Center. And then the next, then also on March 30th, this is all some good stuff going on here. March 30th, where is the March 30th one? That's at, I had it up. I thought I pulled it. It's going to be, it's about Cuba. Just wanna, did I erase it? Sorry about this, y'all. Here it is. Sorry. So on March 30th at Sankofa Bookstore, 2714 Georgia Avenue, on March 30th from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Hear the Cuba, Washington, D.C. The deputy of the chief of mission, Mr. Alejandro Garcia del Toro, is going to discuss the end of the blockade. And then there will also be there's a couple other speakers there. Dr. Samira Adre, who is a U.S. director of the U.S. IFCO Pastors for Peace ELAM program. The ELAM program is the program where where people can go to Cuba and become doctors. And then also Kamau Benjamin of the D.C. Metro Coalition in solidarity with the Cuban Revolution, and was going to be talking about the May Day trip to Cuba coming up in May. So go to that at Sankofa Video Books and Cafe. And then also,
thank you. Okay, I think we got some technical things going, but also on April 3rd.
Oh, you can't hear me?
Now we can. Go ahead.
Oh, I wonder what happened there. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. WPFW Live, meet some of your favorite programmers. Enjoy great music and participate in good spirits. Music by DJ Rasan. And then also Kamau Harris, and featuring DJ Divine, and catering by Chef Jarobi Murray of Flavorful Influences. That's Wednesday, April 3rd from 5 to 9 p.m. at the 8th Street Lounge, 1230 9th Street Northwest. Tickets are $20 and available on Eventbrite by searching WPFW Live and then dot. For details, call 202-618-2110. So that's it for me. So I mean, that's not it for me, but that's it for the announcements we have. And we're gonna play this clip. I'll do it from here, Mike. And then we'll talk about this. So the number to call is 202-588-0893. And then you will be able to weigh in on what we're going to move the conversation to.
No, young people are not going to vote for Joe Biden. A lot of Black people are not going to vote for Joe Biden. Certainly a lot of Palestinian immigrants, Arabs from all of the surrounding countries, probably not going to vote for Joe Biden. But I want people to understand that this is not because people don't care about voting or they don't care that they're going to have Donald Trump as president again. People refuse to vote for a president who is enabling a genocide, period. And it bothers me to no end as the descendant of oppressed people who still live in a white supremacist settler colonial project that still expresses some of that oppression and discrimination from centuries ago. We still live under it, whether people want to believe it or not. But it really galls me on a personal, almost cellular level, that there are very few, can probably count on one hand and not even all of the fingers, very few Democrats who will come out and say, I don't care which party you belong to, I don't care who you're the president of, enabling genocide is evil. And it is wrong. And every politician needs to be saying that. Every journalist in this country needs to be saying that. But that's not happening because there's been a lot of great propaganda about the Zionist entity for years, to the point where the entire history of the creation of the State of Israel and the illegality of it is completely whitewashed. Completely washed over by history. So people don't understand that what's happening in Gaza today, it didn't start on October 6th. It started a few months before 1948, if not a year, when the British government was helping to start the genocide against the Palestinian people in favor of the Zionists. So this issue with Palestine, where Biden is still sending weapons to a state that the UN has declared was an apartheid state already, was an occupation force already, but is now committing a genocide, and the UN has confirmed it. But Joe Biden says he is a Zionist, and he's never going to not be a Zionist, and he's building a naval pier, a temporary pier, to deliver this minuscule amount of aid.
Right.
While he's still giving bombs to Israel to massacre the Palestinian people and to displace them from what's left of their land so they can't ever come back. No, young people, Palestinians, a whole lot of black people, a whole lot of Arab immigrants, a whole lot of people in general who are decent human beings who don't want to live through a genocide, they're not going to vote for Joe Biden. And don't get excited, Republicans, because they're not going to vote for Donald Trump either.
Mic drop.
Mic drop.
So I think they just like dropped the mic and walked away. That's what it sounded like to me. That was actually the voice of our very own host of Darker Than Blue, co-host of Darker Than Blue, Jackie Lukman. She was being interviewed on some other outlet. I think it was a TV thing, and you could hear the host kind of like trying to like you know, that's what we do, we know what that means as hosts. You're trying to get them to wrap it up. trying to get them to be quiet, like but yeah, she laid out a lot there. We want to kind of get our listeners, especially if you can even think about what we just heard with Camila Escalante and just everything. Let's add in our shows. We've had a couple shows on the, I don't know if you can hear that big plane going by. We've had a couple of shows on the crime bill, Baltimore stuff. We know cop cities are going around. There's unemployment. So let's talk about it. How are we thinking about it? One caller. The number to call is 202-588-0893. First caller, thank you for calling. Welcome to Voices with Vision. You have a question or a comment.
Comment, young man, comment. This is Rick calling you long distance from Germany.
Hey, Rick.
If you don't vote for Biden and you don't vote for Trump, who else is there who has a chance of winning?
Mm-hmm. So that's a good. So I don't know why we think. So one, I mean, and I'm going to take that as a question to me. So if we're able to build, if we're to build a formidable movement that deposes evil and takes power from evil, then we can't just be, you know, mechanically going and pulling the lever. One of the Imam Jamil Alameen, H.R. Brown, described back, and this was back when they were Panthers, and one of the things the Black Panthers Party understood, and also the Mississippi Democratic People Freedom Party, was that we use the electoral politics to build power. We don't just vote for and play the game the way they want. We actually use it as a movement building, organizing tool to get people behind, and not just to go in and pull a lever, but actually organize around creating the world we want to see against challenging power. And so we're not just thinking, well, who is there? We got to build the who is there. And it's not even about an individual or a savior. We have to be organized. The people must be organized. And then the only way to do that is also to do mass political education, propagation of what the evil is. And we can't do it by endorsing the evil, by claiming they're the only thing that's out there and voting for it. We have to actually build the alternative that we want to see.
I think, too, another way of of looking at that too is to say that, you know, it's useless using your vote to vote for something that you don't want, to vote for a perspective, political positions and policies that you don't want, that you're not in favor of, and that are against you. Mm-hmm. And it's also bankrupt to vote for who you think is going to be the winner.
Right.
It's not like you're betting on a horse and you're thinking, which one's going to win? That's the one I'm going to vote for. We have to exercise through the vote our political voice, which can be heard and which is heard even when we basically, you know, boycott the Democratic Party and Republican Party duopoly. That's still heard within the Democratic and Republican Party.
That's a vote in itself. That's right.
Yeah. And they see that. They see, you know, the level of support that they got or that they didn't get. And then that helps them to, you know, go back to the drawing board and write a new script of lies to to try to get our support for next time.
Mm-hmm. Thank
so,
you.
I think we have some more callers.
Yeah, we got two more. Next caller, thank you for calling Voices with Vision. You have a question or comment?
I have a comment in response to the to what you played. I am an African American. I have been a Democrat all my life. I mean, the best thing that could be said about Joe Biden is that he was the lesser of two evils. Every time I watch what's happening in Palestine and Gaza, every time I watch Al Jazeera, which I did this morning, he is no longer the lesser of two evils to me. As the speaker said, I mean, I just, as a person, before I'm a Democrat or anything else, as a human being, I can't watch that and vote for somebody who supports it. Donald Trump may be crazy. I'm not sure who I'm going to vote for, but at this point, the balance for me is Donald Trump is crazy. He does crazy things. Crazy people do crazy things. Biden claims to be sane, and he's doing crazy things. Which one do I choose? He is no longer the lesser of two evils to me.
Right. Thank you for that. You know, it's interesting. I think the one of the things that they've gotten us into, the ruling class, is to make us feel like we have to, like we're derelict if we don't choose one of them in some way. And that's interesting. It's a, would we be doing more harm to not vote for any of them? I don't understand why we would think that. And even if we, you know, there's, and they're not the only choices. There's always other candidates. There's socialist candidates, all that, all the way to the federal level. There's Green Party candidates. So I don't know. I mean, and if we have to, and I guess that goes into what you were saying, Craig, is that all, part of it is almost like we have to vote for one of the ones that they will allow to win. You know, kind of thing. And that's actually what makes them allow them to win and that keeps up the facade. But I think that, you know, bottom line, we shouldn't feel pressured to vote, to just choose one of them. I don't think there's anything about that. They give us all kind of propaganda. Your people die for the vote. All kind of they're putting that on us. And they want to circumvent or sideline the real solution in terms of how electoral politics can be used, and is to organize. Get people registered to vote and, you know, campaign on the planet. It's not about this personality contest thing. But we got two more. Oh, no more callers. Okay. Craig, you wanted to say something?
Well, you know, what I heard the caller saying was exactly what Jacqueline Lukman was talking about. And that mm-hmm. is this, you know, disaffection that's going on, you know, even more than usual. With the African population and just, you know, human-minded and moral people in the mm-hmm. electorate period, looking at all this. And then always, it also speaks to this failure of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party duopoly, you know, scenario to address, you know, to address our needs, right? Because at the end of the day, we're having to say the lesser of two evils, the lesser of two evils all the time, instead of mm-hmm. Ever coming up with something that isn't evil, you know.
Right. And we got to organize for that. And then and voting and registration is a tool for organizing, too. We have to see it as that. I mean, it's not just people going and pulling a lever. If we're just content with just doing that and we don't want to join something or build something, you know, and use something that, you know, and then also on the local levels, ballot initiatives, all of that. But I think that's it for us, right? So Stay tuned for Roach Brown and on Crossroads, and Kiche Taifa and Roach Brown on Crossroads. And remember, if you're not fighting for the liberation of your people, fall back.
Fall back.
D-I-E, we lace music with cold, just something to bring us closer. Kick true, the young black youth like we're supposed to. Don't swine.
Celebrating 20 years, the New African Film Festival, presented by AFI and Africa World Now Project, brings the vibrancy of African filmmaking from all corners of the continent and across the diaspora to the DMV at the AFI Silver Theater and Cultural Center in downtown Silver Spring from March 15 to the 28th. The festival features 26 films from 16 countries, including 3 years' premieres and discussions with filmmakers. Explore the diversity of new filmmaking from Africa at the 2024 New African Film Festival. Tickets and full schedule at AFI.com/silver. That's AFI.com/silver. Or call 301-495-6700. 301-495-6700. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Diverse City Fund is a grassroots grant source for change makers of color in the nation's capital. We fund social justice work by and for DC people of the global majority. Apply online now, no later than Friday, March 29th, by going to the website www.diversecityfund.org. You can send email to info@diversecityfund.org. Upcoming info session dates and past recordings are online to answer all your questions. See www.diversecityfund.org or call 202-743-0130. That's 202-743-0130.
Diverse City Fund ofrece subvenciones para agentes de cambio de color en la capital de la nación. Financiamos el trabajo de justicia racial y social por y para líderes de color en D.C. Solicite una subvención en línea hoy, al más tardar el viernes 29 de marzo, visitando el sitio web www.diversecityfund.org. Fechas y horarios y grabaciones de las sesiones informativas pasadas están en nuestra página web. Para preguntas, visiten www.diversecityfund.org o llamen al 202-743-0130. Eso es 202-743-0130.
WPFW is looking for a new place to hang our hats and microphones. And we're betting that members of WPFW's In the Know listening community, folks like you, may know of spaces where we might make our new home. Have you walked past or know of a cool space that appears to be for lease? Hip us to it. Know of something that's not yet on the market? We're all ears. Your station for Jazz and Justice requires 2,200 square feet of space in Washington, D.C. or immediate environs. Metro accessible with nearby parking. We value your suggestions and observations as we embark on this vital mission. Email your tips to wpfw.lsb.relocation@gmail.com. And thanks for all you do to nourish and sustain WPFW, building a better world one broadcast at a time.
You'd be so nice to come home to. You'd be so nice. Bye.
Greetings, family. The WPFW Programmers Association, in harmony with station management, presents WPFW Live, a series of events over the next 6 months in partnership with some of your favorite local venues. The goal is to re-engage the community through a remembering of the valued relationships forged, all pointing to a reimagination of our future. Our first WPFW Live event will be held Wednesday, April 3rd, 5 to 9 p.m.